Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR 96.3, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. I'm Bramonte Bryant in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Well, tonight we're going to talk with one of the top officials in the District of Columbia government. She runs a department many of us may know very little about or what it does in particular. And tonight, this show, we're going to learn more about D.C.'s Auditor's Office. Our guest tonight is D.C. Auditor Kathy Patterson. The phone lines are open. If you have questions for Ms. Patterson, this is the time to do it. If you want to learn more about the Auditor's Office, what they do, what you should know about it, this is the time to be engaged. The phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Ms. Patterson, thank you so much for joining us on this Thursday night.
My pleasure. I love your intro. I don't know that anybody's called me one of the most important officials before.
Well, you see, that's the setup. All right, so tell us about the D.C. auditor and the auditor's office. I would assume, especially you having been involved and been on the council, my guess is that most folks don't know what you or your office do.
We are your waste, fraud, and abuse police. The district actually has two leading offices that do accountability work, that go after how is the district performing. One is the Inspector General, which is a position named by the mayor, and the other is the D.C. Auditor, which is considered part of the legislative branch of government. So I'm put into this position by the council and confirmed by the council. So we do the IG and I do somewhat similar work, but we coordinate to make sure we don't duplicate. But we go after, we look at performance of programs, and we look at how are things doing, how are the taxpayer dollars being spent. We've done reports recently on the district's 911 system, on police firings and reinstatements, on some of the housing programs. We look at a variety of things all across the district government.
So let's get into that. How is the district doing? You mentioned the 911 program. I know there were some issues. There have been some issues with it, and often in many jurisdictions across the nation. Where are you with that in your assessment?
We actually hired a team of experts to come in and look at the operation of the Office of Unified Communications, the 911 system, and put out an audit report in October that found lots of issues, that confirmed some of the controversial reporting that had been done on mistakes made and lives lost. And one of the things we found was a lack of sound leadership, a lack of sound management over the previous several years. And then to my surprise, to our sort of chagrin, after the first of the year, the mayor reinstated the woman who had been in charge of the agency throughout most of the period of time we were looking at. So we did follow-up. We've done one follow-up report, and we have another follow-up report that'll come out in another month or two, saying how have they done in the recommendations that were made by this audit, and not very much progress has been made. We recommended things like more supervisors on the floor to work with the call takers to help them do a better job. That hadn't been done. We had a lot of recommendations for better use of the technology that call takers have, and that seems still to be a problem. So lots of problems remain there, which isn't to say we don't have a lot of really good employees. We do. It's just you've got to get close to, with that kind of work, you've got to get as close as you can get to perfection, as few mistakes as possible, because so much is at stake.
And what's your assessment of why the mayor would reinstate someone that you felt like should not have been?
I have to think just lack of knowledge about the audit. At a press conference on our follow-up report, she sort of said she didn't really know anything about the audit. So that has to be a chain of command issue. You know, how did this information not get up the chain of command to the mayor? But in the meantime, she's sent the individual's nomination to the council, and in fact, there's a follow-up hearing on the 911 operations at the council this next week, a week from today. There was a hearing with some of the families of victims a couple of weeks ago, but the interim director of the agency wasn't available, so she'll be back to testify and to talk about what progress they're going to claim that they are making. So we'll get some more information on that next week.
Our guest tonight is Kathy Patterson. She's the D.C. auditor. She's also a former D.C. council member. Phone lines are open if you have questions for Ms. Patterson, some questions about the auditor's office and what they do, and maybe if you've had some connection to it or some experience with it, what's your experience been like? 202-319-7810.
And Bramante, I love doing this kind of show because it's one of the ways we get our ideas for things we should be looking at. So if you have listeners who want to give us this topic that we should be looking at, I'm always happy to hear that.
Very important point. So you see it here. Ms. Patterson says she's open to any any suggestions you have. So start dialing 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. If you're in D.C., you pay her salary, so she's here to answer your questions.
Absolutely.
Ms. Patterson, you know, one of the reports that came out, I believe back in February of 2021, was the Metropolitan Police Department compliance with use of force recommendations.
Right.
That your office put out. What you found, tell me about what you found and the department's response thus far to it.
Sure. We've done a couple of reports, and we have one more yet to go, looking at officer-involved fatalities and whether our police department has kept up with the reforms that were put in place, you know, 10, 15 years ago. And the first report that we put out was after four police-involved fatalities in 2018 and 2019. And we found some of the things we found were that the department is not doing as good a job as it had been doing maybe 10 years ago in investigating these cases. This is the internal investigation. How did the police work? How did this happen? Were mistakes made? And some of the changes have been made in some of the protocols. But one of the things that has not happened that was recommended was making public the results of the internal affairs investigation of the officer-involved fatalities and the use of force work group that does the use of force overviews, their reports, making those public so that the public can actually see what kind of questioning occurred, what kind of investigation, looking at how did the shooting of a civilian occur, did the police give ample warning, you know, that kind of thing, what were the circumstances. So making those reports public is one of the ways to try to ensure good practice, and that's one thing that Chief Conte committed to do but has not yet done. So that's one that we're going to continue to follow up on.
And so do you have direct conversations with the police chief and those in those in the positions, or is there some distance in these reports that you have to have where you don't have a lot of interaction? Sort of help us understand, you know, how you gather that information, how open the police department is in working with the auditor's office.
The auditor's office was created in the Home Rule Charter, so we've been around since the mid-70s, and we have very broad authority, up to and including subpoena power. So we get access to everything. Even documents that are considered confidential, we can see, but we have to obey the same confidentiality rules that the agencies do. We've had very good success in working with the police department in recent years, I have to say. And one of the things that we did in the use of force investigations was we brought back the gentleman who had been the monitor working with the Department of Justice and our police department in the early 2000s, a guy named Michael Bromwich. So he's the one, he and his team have done this look back and this current look at how we're doing. So one of the things that is an advantage in our office is we do a lot of the work internally at my own team of auditors and analysts, but we occasionally hire sort of outside experts, if you will, to come in and look at things like police use of force or looking at 911 and things like that. So one of the advantages we have is being able to do that and bring in these experts. But we've had pretty good response from the police department.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tonight our conversation is with the district's auditor, Kathy Patterson. Phone lines are open. Any question you may have, something that you feel like the auditor's office should be looking into, tonight is the night to bring that forth. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. The phone lines are open. Let's go to the phone lines now. Sheila is calling from the district with a question about the district's housing program. Sheila.
Yes. Hello. I'm sorry. I'm in the car driving. Can you hear me?
Can hear you. Just be careful.
Okay, thank you. There was a program launched, the D.C. Homeowners Assistance Fund, in June, right after the primary. And I applied for the program then. It's for mortgage assistance, utility bills, internet, what have you. And you submit all the documentation, which I've done.
And I'm not hearing Sheila.
Still
I'm not sure if you can hear me.
It's now November.
I can
every
hear.
Time I, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. So every time I reach out to them, they keep saying it's under the review process. I kept thinking they had spent the money and didn't have the funds before the fiscal year started, but now it's still the same thing. So I don't know.
And so you're having problems really getting in touch with anyone in the housing department?
No, I've gotten in touch, mm-hmm. but they are not following. They keep saying it's in review. In the meantime, all the utilities, bills that you're trying to get assistance with are becoming way, way past due, and the mortgage and all of that. And they keep saying that it's under review, but nobody is can tell you, are you under review? Are you in the line? Are you number one in line for review? Are you number 100?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it seems like it's been going on for too long.
So, Ms. Patterson, you couldn't hear Sheila's question?
I think what she was saying is that the housing program that she's engaged in, she's not getting responsiveness from the district government agency, if I understood what she was saying there at the end.
I think so.
And one of the things that you can do if you are a district resident, if the actual agency isn't being responsive, you do have another alternative, and that is to go to your ward council member, whichever ward you're in, call that office, or the council's housing committee, call that office. So they sometimes can do casework to help, you know, kick through a long jam.
I have been in touch with my Ward 1 council member office, and they're trying to get the same information I'm trying to get, and nothing's happening. So I believe the program is poorly run.
And which program is this?
I'm sorry, I'm in the car.
Is it a rental assistance program, or is it a construction?
It's a homeowner's assistance program to help homeowners affected by COVID and what have you.
Turn your radio down, Sheila, because I think we're getting sort of feedback.
Okay. All right. Can you hear me now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm just saying, I think the auditor's office ought to look into this homeowner's assistance program, because I don't think it's being run properly.
Thank you. That will go on my list. We did a lot of work a few years ago on the Housing Production Trust Fund on how they were doing in terms of trying to construct new housing and then keep in compliance with that housing being provided to low and moderate income folks. But we haven't done any housing work in the last couple of years, so we're going to be starting that up again. So I appreciate the information.
And thank you so much, Sheila, and best of luck. And again, I'm sure if you need to call the auditor's office, you can do so. So thank you for your call.
Bye.
So, Ms. Patterson, let's talk a little bit about the report regarding education data with the schools in the city. What's the status there in terms of that collecting that kind of information, the importance of it, and where you see it right now? Is it in a place?
No, thank you. Thank you for asking that. We were required by the council a couple of years ago to do a major audit of education data, what we're collecting, how we're collecting it, how successfully are we using it. And there is a lot of data being collected, a lot of stuff we're required by the federal government to report, some of the civil rights data, some of the disability data. But we're not doing everything we can with data. And if you're not using the information you're collecting, then it's really can be kind of a waste. Let me give you an example. When I first got the draft report on this education data audit, I was reading through it, and I saw something that I thought was a mistake. It said, we in the district hold back 18% of our ninth graders.
Hmm.
And make them repeat a grade. I thought, no, that can't be right. That must be 1.8%. It can't possibly be 18%. Well, it is, sure enough. Almost one in five kids gets held back at ninth grade. And one of the things that other cities have done about this problem of kids who just aren't ready for high school is they put in place what we call early warning systems. So they take a bunch of data for looking at fifth graders and sixth graders and seventh graders, looking at their attendance, looking at their whether they're timely, looking at their grades, looking at their sort of attitude, looking at everything that they that we do collect data on, and sort of coming up with an algorithm, if you will, that can say, this is a kid that might be in trouble, you know, based on the absences, based on, you know, some of these other factors and other data we collect. And that's something that we could be doing to identify these children before they're at risk of failure, before they're at risk of having to repeat a grade, and we're not doing it. Kwame Brown, when he was chairman of the council, put in a program, put in legislation to authorize doing this kind of a warning system, and it was never done. And that's it's just an example of a kind of thing you can do with the different pieces of data that we collect. We have a lot of kids who are really mobile. They go to three or four high schools.
Ms. Patterson, hold your thought, because I want you to be able to expound on that a little bit more. Sure. We're going to bump over to the other side. So we're going to take a quick break. Don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com, or you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. If you're on the phone line, stay right there. Andrew, we're going to get to you. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. Give us a call. The phone lines are still open, 202-319-7810. The original Quiet Storm with Don Mons is next on WHUR 96.3. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on SiriusXM channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Tonight we're talking with D.C. Auditor Kathy Patterson. If you have any questions for Ms. Patterson, any suggestions on things that her office should be investigating, looking into, this is your opportunity to speak with her and give her your comments. Wide open, 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Ms. Patterson, you were talking about the educational report, and you were making other points before I had to kind of break you real quick.
Right, and the point I was trying to make is that we should use data to identify kids who are going to be in trouble and provide them with services and try to keep them from having to repeat the ninth grade. Another example, there was a news story maybe a year ago on a high school student who had walked across the stage. She had gotten her diploma that day at graduation, and she was all set to go to college, but she had been at three of our high schools. And somehow or other, even after she walked across the stage, they caught up with her that she didn't have all the credits she needed to graduate, and she had to go back to school. And that, I mean, that's heartbreaking, but that's another thing that happens because we have so many kids who go from school to school to school. We have, you know, 60-some charter schools. We have a lot of schools to keep track of, and we don't keep track of all the data across all of our public schools. So nobody was collecting the data for this child who thought she graduated but then didn't. And if we'd had a more robust data system, that problem would not have occurred. She would have known January of that year that she needed these additional credits. So that was just another real practical example of why collecting data and using it is really important in education.
And I can hear parents, I can hear listeners, I can maybe hear students who are kind of going through the process, you know, for lack of a better term, the right way, wondering, oh, Ms. Patterson, how can this happen? Why is this happening? I mean, we sort of got the why, that, you know, the data points aren't really being checked and followed in the way that they should. But I think the question then becomes, why isn't it?
One of the issues here that is a real challenge when we have such a robust charter sector is coming up with things that everybody follows. And one of the things we've done with our robust charter sector is have a great deal of independence and, you know, lack of rules, lack of consistency, lack of consistently collected data. So there's some of the things where we policymakers have left it up to the individual local school whether they collect data. And that's one of the things, the points we made in this report, was we need to have our state education agency act like a state education agency and say, these 12 pieces of data, everybody's going to have to turn in a similar fashion. So one of the things we need to do is to really act like a state when it comes to our schools, even though we have something like 60 local education agencies, D.C. public schools being the big one, but then the other 60 charter schools being among the others. So that's one of the issues, that it's a sort of a downside of having a really robust charter sector is not having the full consistency across all of our schools.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We want you to be part of this conversation with D.C. Auditor Kathy Patterson. Any questions you have for her, any suggestions of areas of investigation or research that the auditor's office can do, this is your chance to present your case. 202-319-7810. Let's go back to the phone lines, and Andrew is calling from the district with a question or comment. Go right ahead, Andrew. Are you there, Andrew? Okay, Andrew, give us a call back. I think we lost you, but we'd like to hear what you have to say. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Do we have Andrew? Okay, Andrew's gone. Ms. Patterson, how long have you been in this position as D.C. Auditor?
Almost 8 years, coming up on 8 years next month.
And you were a three-term council member, correct?
Right, right.
Former journalist, correct?
That's right.
So you're coming into this position with a lot of transferable skills to a
I know how to ask questions, yes, absolutely.
And so tell me how bringing all that into this position, going from the council, let's, you know, specifically sort of stay in that kind of the political realm, your experience on the council, how has it impacted your work as an auditor?
Well, it was one of the reasons I was interested in this job when Chairman Mendelson first discussed it with me, because from my time on the council, I had made requests for audits from time to time. I knew about the office. I know the kind of work they can do. And for me, it was an opportunity to continue to work to try to help the council get better, faster, stronger, do better oversight. So I've really used my 12 years on the council to help sort of fuel the kind of studies that we try to do that we hope will be helpful in council oversight. And one of the things that has been frustrating is some of the council members really do use our work, but we need to build a closer relationship with all the offices to make sure they know what we're doing and how we can be helpful to them. So that's something that's a challenge for me. It's not just a matter of putting out a report, but when we have recommendations, following up on them, maybe testifying about the recommendations and really trying to make sure that they're as useful as they can be. So that is a real challenge.
And having experience in the legislative process, I would assume, helps you knowing how sort of to speak with your former legislators, whether all were in office. I'm sure they all weren't there when you were there that are currently there. But I would assume that sort of helps you knowing sort of the inner workings of D.C. government.
I certainly hope so. And wanting to see the council really be as assertive and as strong and as efficient and effective as it can be. No, absolutely. That is a real challenge.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go back to the phone line. Shante is calling from the district. Go right ahead, Shante, with your question or comment.
Hi, I wanted to ask the auditor if they audit all agencies within the district, or is it just select few agencies in the district, and how do you choose which agencies to focus on?
That's a great question.
We have authority to audit everybody. There's a word in the charter that when it talks about my office, it has the word all, A-L-L. We have access to all documents across the D.C. government. But we are a fairly small agency. We've got between 25 and 30 staff at any particular time, and so we can't audit every agency all the time. What we try to do, and this is something that I've been trying to do based on a commitment I made when I was confirmed, we try to go after what are the highest priorities for the legislature. So one of the reasons we did a series of audits on the Housing Production Trust Fund was that's such a high priority. One of the things we have in the works right now is the first of two studies on the Vision Zero program. This came from the community. ANC's citizens and civic associations, folks in the community wanted us to take a look at Vision Zero, at the effort to try to end all traffic deaths and serious industries in injuries in the district. So we have a report that will be coming out in another month, 6 weeks or so, on Vision Zero, on the transportation department's role and how they have done in trying to have engineering studies, build better, you know, better road policies and practices. And then we're just getting started on looking at the enforcement side of things. So I use that as an example because that's something that in the community cares about deeply. The organizations like the ANCs and the bicycle organizations and things like that. So we do hear from the community. And as I said at the outset, that's one of the reasons a show like this is so important to us, because it's a way of hearing from the community. We also do an annual brainstorming session, my staff and I, you know, throw ideas up on a blackboard, if you will, and you know, sort of feed off each other, coming up with ideas of things that are priorities. So that those are the different ways. We have a few things that we're mandated to do, but most of the audits that we do are at the discretion of the office, or council members request them, or so forth and so on. So, but again, open to suggestion.
Shantae, is there a specific agency that you would want the auditor's office to look into?
I would say yes. I would think that it would be probably something that's dealing more with the people of the community. There's a lot that's happening out in our community. So maybe with, like, Department of Disability Services, making sure that the people within the community are getting the supports that they need, the funding is properly being managed there. So like RSA, DDA, those would be probably agencies that would probably, you know, I would recommend a further deep dive into.
Well, you know the acronym, so it sounds like you are involved in the community. Once.
No, thank you. That is one agency we have not looked at in the time that I've been in office, so that's very helpful. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Shantae, and appreciate your call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before we take another quick break, Ms. Patterson, talk to us a little bit about a report that came out, I guess, this past summer, the NEAR Act, and the auditor's office looking into that, trying to strengthen it. And I know one of your press releases came out saying it was kind of mixed results in the public health approach to curbing violence in the city.
Right. This is the Neighborhood Engagement Achieves Results Act that was put in place in 2015, 2016 to come up with ways of trying to address violence in the community. And we looked at the violence interrupters programs, we looked at the hospital-based violence interruption program, and one of the conclusions we reached were there are a lot of things that are in place that show promise. But again, back to data, one of the things that we're not doing enough consistently is collecting the data on the violence interrupter programs to be able to say, you know, how many people were touched by the programs, how many people were, you know, were served, and to really be able to demonstrate effectiveness. One of the things that we did recommend was an even deeper dive, a sort of a social science kind of study that can look at a neighborhood that has been served by violence interrupters and then compare it to a neighborhood of similar demographics that hasn't been, and really try to measure in a social science kind of way how these things are working.
You had mentioned in the, and I'm sort of just in some of my notes from the press release, I think it had said at least, you know, two of the mandates in the legislation have really been ignored.
Right, and, right. One of the things that the law required was a program that put together police officers and mental health providers, mental health professionals, social workers, police. This is something we've heard a lot about in the wake of George Floyd, about having, you know, if you have a mental health crisis, you know, an officer with a gun is not necessarily the best person to be addressing that issue. And one of the things required in the law was a partnership kind of program and a partnership approach. And one of the things that was a response from the administration was, well, we're training our police officers to do a better job. And the point being, that wasn't what the law said. The law says this partnership between the two disciplines, between the two agencies. And that's one that actually, as you point out, hasn't gone forward.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking with the auditor for the District of Columbia, former council member Kathy Patterson. She's been in the job now almost 8 years, Ms. Patterson. Did I get that right?
That's right, yes.
And so she has been deeply involved in district issues, and the auditor's office is one of those where I'm going to assume most of you all have no idea what they do. And Ms. Patterson is here tonight to tell us a little bit about how they do it and what they do. I want to go back, if I can, just for a few moments, back to the collecting the data on the education side. There was some pushback, right, on that report that came out that they felt, you know, some folks within the educational realm in the city felt like you were sort of, your office was off track in terms of what they should have been looking at. Talk a little bit about that if you can.
I think, well, first to acknowledge that there is a lot of data being collected.
Mm-hmm.
We are meeting some of the federal and some of the local requirements. But I think the major point that one of the major points we tried to make was data is only good as its use. And one of the things that we did find was that the District of Columbia was collecting some very important data and sharing it with the federal government, but not making it available locally, not making it available publicly. And that was kind of, that didn't make a whole lot of sense. And I think the Office of the State Superintendent, quite candidly, is doing a better job of that. One of the things we faulted the administration on was not following some of the requirements on teacher data. One of the things, and this may sound kind of silly, but one of the things that they were doing was reassigning a unique identifier to every teacher, reassigning a new number every year. So you couldn't track what teachers were teaching year after year after year because the teachers, they got a different, you know, identifier every year. Well, that's changed. So now our teachers are being tracked, if you will, with something that a teacher keeps through their career in the district. My point being that they are making progress. They are moving forward, just not as fast or in as many areas as we would like to see. And I think there was a sense of that we didn't give sufficient credit for some of the things that were being accomplished. And frankly, that is an ongoing challenge for the kind of work we do. We get attention when we're critical. We don't get as much attention to our reports when we find that things are going well. So we have to continue to remind ourselves that when we put these reports out, by the way, we should acknowledge what is being done well, and we're trying to do a better job of that.
And we should acknowledge that that education report was about a 300-page report. So
yeah, folks, we had to put it in two volumes. It was so good.
So, folks, if you want to read it on a nice rainy day,
rainy weekend.
It's an important read, but it's long. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our guest tonight is D.C. Auditor Kathy Patterson. This is the Insight segment. The music is playing. That means we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. Phone lines are still open. Back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. I'm Bramante Bryan in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Tonight we're talking with D.C. Auditor Kathy Patterson. Phone lines are still open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. If you have a question for Ms. Patterson or a comment or a suggestion on what the auditor's office might want to sort of look into and take a check on, tonight is the night to send that our and her way. We're going to go back to the phone lines. Robert is calling from Maryland with a question or comment. Go right ahead, Robert.
Good evening. I had a question. I got a ticket from a camera, and it was $200. Do they ever audit that money to where it goes and what they do with it?
Okay.
It goes into the treasury, and we I hope spend it effectively. And if you're from Maryland and you've paid your ticket, thank you very much. We have a serious problem in the district with folks who get tickets in Virginia and in Maryland who don't pay those tickets and who we don't have a reciprocity agreement with the two states. And so that's something that is sort of on the drawing board right now for the district to try to make sure that we're getting the benefits of having the cameras, especially when they do happen to catch folks from the other jurisdictions. So that's something I mentioned that we're starting up, going to be doing a second Vision Zero audit looking at enforcement. and it will touch on the will be looking at the camera program and looking at the red light cameras and the speed cameras and so any of the issues involved in that program and how effective that program is as a safety program. So I'm not sure we're going to look at where the dollars go, but that's a good point. One of the criticisms of the program has been over time that it's a money maker as opposed to a safety maker.
Mm-hmm.
And so we will be looking at, if we're not looking directly at the expenditures, we will certainly be looking at whether it is meeting its goal of improving public safety, of saving lives, as opposed to simply cashing out and building up our treasury, as Robert notes. And thank you again, Robert, for paying that ticket.
Yeah, thank you, Robert. And Ms. Patterson,
all right, thank you all.
Thank you for your call, Robert. And he brings up a good point, and you also, Ms. Patterson, that he, you know, what he's saying about where is that money going. I mean, the mayor has talked about there are going to be more cameras. Speed limits are being decreased. You know, the mayor has said that it's about safety, and I know more bike lanes are coming. But, you know, a lot of folks can look at that and go, wait a minute. I mean, we're going from down to 35 to 25. In a moment, we're going to be crawling along the streets. And if you're putting more cameras there, it gives a sense of sometimes that, wait a minute, is this a money grab? You know, when is enough enough? And I think it's a hard pushback if you couch it under safety, which I'm not alleging that the mayor is not concerned about that. But I think the other side kind of looks at that and says, wait a minute, where does this stop? Is there going to be a camera on every corner? Is that something your office just can initiate to look into, or does there have to be kind of an uprising from the community to say?
No, we can look into it. And as I say, we are in this enforcement report. We will be, we're again just doing the research on, we will be looking at whether the cameras are being deployed in a way that promotes safety. So is, you know, at a particular intersection where there's a speed camera or a red light camera, is that having the effect of slowing people down and stopping that red light running? That, again, that's data. That's stuff you can look at. That's gettable information, and that is something that we will be looking at in this audit.
Before we leave, we still have a few moments left. I wanted to ask you about the report, you know, the investigation, the reinstatement of 36 fired MPD officers were reinstated, right? Received
right.
About $14 million in back pay.
Right.
Where was your office in terms of that? What's your review of that? What did you find there? What's your sense of, you know, how that happens? Fired, come back. Why are they back? What did the auditor's office find in that case?
Thank you for asking. That was one of our more recent reports that really mm-hmm. did get quite a lot of attention. The high cost for back pay comes because these cases over time have taken forever, almost 6 years for someone to be fired, protest, appeal, go to an arbitrator, and then get the job back. And so that's, you know, 6 years of back pay, that really adds up. But this has turned into a very convoluted series of steps for a chief of police, for leadership of a department, to try to get rid of someone who has been deemed to be not what we want in our officers carrying guns around the city for our protection. And there are a number of steps in this process that we have flagged in the report explaining, you know, what happens. Sometimes there's a trial board that is made up of police officers inside the department. They make a judgment whether someone should be put on, you know, on administrative leave for 30 days or fired. There were cases where the chief upped the punishment to a termination but didn't have the authority to do so. So that's gotten squared away. The police chief can create a second trial board but can't up the punishment. So one of the things that we are looked at in this report were the sort of multiple sets of steps. And one of the things that I think the council is going to need to take a look at, and the department as well, is whether that can be a streamlined process. You want the officers who should not be on our force to be gone from our force, but you also want to assure decent protections for folks to make sure they're not being railroaded out for insufficient reason. So there are lots of steps along this way that the policymakers really do need to take a good look at. One of the things the council has already done is it removed discipline from the collective bargaining agreement, so that discipline is now, as it is for most DC employees, a management right not covered by the collective bargaining agreement. That will have an impact on this sort of Byzantine set of steps in terminations and reinstatements. So that is something that we'll see how that plays out. But one of the things the council needs to take into account is if these cases now go to the Office of Employee Appeals, that agency needs to be adequately resourced for it to be able to handle these cases. So this is it's a sort of a sensational topic that for every three officers who walk out of the department, two walk back in, and that is sensational, but it's just a very complicated set of processes that really need to be looked at by the policymakers.
In our last couple of minutes, is there one particular issue, for lack of a better word, that your office has not been able to look into that you want to review, or does it you sort of take them as they come?
There isn't anything that we have wanted to look at that we haven't been able to. There are a couple of things that we got started on that we had to stop because of COVID, because things simply weren't operating. But I can tell you, we do have a couple more COVID reports that are going to be coming out. When I mentioned a minute or two ago that we sometimes have done audits that haven't gotten any attention because they're not critical, mm-hmm. we did one a couple of years ago on Department of Health's oversight of nursing homes, and actually found that our Department of Health does a pretty good job of inspecting and making sure that nursing homes are operating as they're supposed to be. So we decided, but we didn't get much attention because it wasn't too critical. But we decided because of COVID, because of all the national concerns about what happened in nursing homes, we're now taking a look at how did the district's nursing homes do faced with a pandemic. And that's a report that we'll have out coming out in another maybe couple of months or 6 weeks, something like that. So that's one that I thought would be really interesting given our earlier findings and then facing a pandemic. You know, when push comes to shove, did we continue to do a decent job in our nursing homes? So that's one that we'll have coming out fairly soon.
She is Kathy Patterson. She is the auditor for the District of Columbia, our guest tonight on the Insights segment. Ms. Patterson, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for informing us, educating us, answering
thank
some tough
you.
Questions.
Thank you for the outreach. I appreciate it.
And taking all of the phone calls. We appreciate it. And if folks want to contact the auditor's office, how could they do so?
That's a trick question because we're in the process of moving to new offices.
Okay. You have a website, right?
Yeah. Give us a couple of weeks and then call or email us. And we have a very good website. All that information is on the website. It's dcauditor.org.
Gotcha. Sounds great. Ms. Patterson, thank you so much for being with us. And best
thank
of
you.
Luck as you move forward in the good work that you are doing in the city. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
And you too. That's the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Thursday, November 3rd is my father's birthday. Happy birthday to him. I'm Bramante Bride in for Harold Fisher. Have a great night.